speak on this issue. Before the city council, when we were allowed back after the injunction was modified on January 10th, we can now go to city council meetings and we can go to offices on business, but we can't linger at this in the entire block there. But we did go to this meeting and attempted to speak publicly on these appointments to suggest our concern that they appoint some people who will really do something about the police department, really hold them in check. And this is what happened.
The next is the Citizens Police Review Board, three reappointments and one vacancy. Council members Porter, Kennedy, Primack, and Riley are the interested council members in this case. So we have a group of people. I'll mention all the names. Please come forward in any order that you can. Mr. Kenneth Brown, Brent Faust, Tony Guerrero, Jim King, Bruce Morse, David Brown.
Also coming forward was Becky Johnson and myself, waiting to speak in line on these issues.
Please come forward. Introduce yourself so we'll know who we're talking about.
Hello.
My name is Brent Faust, and I've been living in Santa Cruz and working here for about 2.5 years. I'm interested in the Citizens Police Review Board. I think that I can bring a different fresh insight and view on whatever the matter is going to be, and I really look forward to just being involved in seeing how things go. I don't know a lot about the police review boards, but it's not like I bring a lot of experience. But I do bring the time that it would take to be involved and the willingness to learn and to be a part of it.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Now, I apologize for the bad recording, and that's because I was not allowed to place my microphone at the podium. Instead, I had to place it off to the side and use the speaker equipment of the city council sound system, which, as you can hear, is not ideal in this situation. Not too impressed, by the way, with the speaker's speech, if you were able to hear it. The man is a man of color, but he seems like essentially a colorless bureaucrat in spite of his color. I don't know. I often think people are doing this to add these items to their resume. I don't know what's going on, but I'm looking for people on the Citizens Police Review Board who really want to review police misconduct and advocate for those who feel that they've been hurt, and look at situations very, very closely instead of simply accepting the word of the police department, which primarily is what the CPRB has done for the last 5 years.
Thank you,
Mr. Faust.
Next,
please.
Hi, my name is Kenneth Brown. I work for the Metropolitan Transit District. Same as maintenance worker there. I've been there for 15 years. I've been living in Santa Cruz County for 40 years. I've seen this town grow. I graduated from Santa Cruz High School. And when I was there, I never seen police officers walk in the halls. And when they came up to the school to teach you something good, not to arrest anybody. You waved at police officers when they passed by you. And they knew your names not because you was a criminal, just because they just knew who you was. They knew your name because not because you was black, just because they knew who you were. They just knew you. Police officers, nowadays, they're like a new pair of Red Wing boots. You know, they got to be worked in, see? And until they get worked in, they have no mileage on them. Well, the review board is the oil on that boot, see? See, because you can't work in a good pair of boots unless you oil them up. Somebody got to oil the boots, you know, or else they get tight and they hurt. See, they hurt when you walk. I wear boots all the time. I can tell you, they hurt if you're not worked in really good. Well, this is wrong with some of the police officers. Some of them aren't worked in really good. But, you know, we got some oil for them. We got to get some good Red Wing oil that's working in. I'm a group home relief counselor. I deal with group home kids from juvenile hall. Various different kinds of crimes that these kids commit. There's certain things that keep arising constantly with these kids. And it's the hassle that they say that the police officers give them. Now, grant you that some of these kids, they have committed crimes, but there's just certain things that keep arising all the time, you know. It's soon as they find out they're in a group home, well, hey, you're labeled. I don't know. Sometimes you're driving around here black, you can be labeled. You can be profiled. Hey, man, that guy's got a Cadillac. Is he working? Do I need to pull him over? You know, stuff like that. So I would be interested in being on the review board. The likes of these police officers, Sergeant Derby, the good ones, man, you're not going to see none of those no more. Those moments are busted, broken, thrown away. We got a new breed of police officers. It's that new breed of red-wing boot that needs the oil on. Thank you.
Another question?
Now, here actually is, this is also a man of color, black man, who I would like to actually see on the police review board, not because I know too much about him, but just based on what he's saying, he is willing to take a critical stance toward the police. He's been concerned about police misconduct. I mean, if you're not concerned about police misconduct, you shouldn't be anywhere near the board, and that really kind of leaves out most of the people on the board, including people who were one-time liberals like Sandy Brown and Becky Blythe, appointments respectively of Christopher Crone and Keith Sugar. Brown can't seem... She's also the co-chair of SCAN, and she was also active to some extent in the campaign to end the sleeping ban with the Fasters last year. And one had, you know, I really had some high hopes for her a couple years ago on the police review board, but she became increasingly, she has a tendency to take on too much in the way of tasks, and so she stopped holding public meetings. In the SCAN situation, of course, I've discussed her before. She allowed the subversion and dissolution of the housing committee on SCAN. She allowed SCAN steering committee to meet in a private house without having housing committee members present. The housing committee was the only people defending the Dolphin Lee apartment and standing up against the sleeping ban law. And she allowed that whole thing to go down. And then when we attempted to bring the issue to the public, she wouldn't allow it to put on the agenda for SCAN, and the elections got rigged. And so I have some problems with how she's dealt with not just SCAN, but also the police review board, where she used to hold regular meetings with the public, again, and as did Becky Blythe, and then just stopped doing it. Now she's almost completely incommunicado, and perhaps her absenteeism is such that she shouldn't even be on the board based on the law. You can't miss more than 3 meetings a year, and she may have missed, you know, her 3 meetings last year. So the current board is horrible, and I'd like to see this guy who just spoke on the board, not because the board's going to be able to do anything anyway. He would be a voice in the wilderness, but a voice in the wilderness that's really willing to speak is better than somebody who's sort of constantly scheming for a council majority and doesn't raise the issues clearly. That's been my constant refrain around the sleeping ban, and people like Crone and Sugar, and indeed Sandy Brown. Sandy Brown hasn't spoken up on issues with any consistency at the police review board or in public. And that's a real sad thing, and that's the reason I've asked her repeatedly to resign. And, of course, she hasn't done that and will be probably, you know, on the board for the for the near future until she finally gets the message and gets her butt off the board. Let's hear more of this city council special session where they were hearing commission potential applicants for the police review board. And, again, standing in line waiting to speak were myself and Becky Johnson, who were not applying for the position but wanted to have some public comment on it. And this is what happened.
You're not on the list.
I'm a member of the public, and I'd like to...
You're not on the list. Please step away from the podium.
We're not members of the public allowed to...
Step away from the podium. I'll make that announcement later.
So what happened here was Becky Johnson tried to, give essentially a 3-minute speech about what she felt about the appointments that were being considered, particularly the reappointments. I think she was going to oppose Guerrero and King and Bruce Morse, who are sort of the 3 old-line conservatives on the board, who 2 of whom were reappointed already, the 3rd of whom, Bruce Morse, was so out of it, you might say. I don't know if the word senile is appropriate, but he just didn't seem to know what was going on much, that he wasn't reappointed. But Becky tried to speak on this issue, and not only did Mayor Fitzmaurice say, no, you can't talk because I'm only listening to people who are applying for these positions, but he wouldn't tell her when she could speak. And it turned out that they finally allowed speaking 2.5 hours later around 6 o'clock, is my understanding. I wasn't there, but I heard it happen at the very end of this commission process, and it was not announced. Even though on the agenda it said there shall be speaking on each of these items by the public. So the mayor was actually using the ignorance of when that speaking time was, refusing to tell people when that speaking time was, to drive away his critics. He was making an unreasonable demand on the public that they have to sit there for as many hours as it took for him to make up his mind when he wanted public comment. Now, his responsibility is to announce that in advance. Might have made it very difficult for the public anyway, because if you say it's going to come at the end of all the commission appointment speeches, then you don't know when that is anyway, so it'll be ambiguous, but at least you'll have a certain clarity there in a way. But he wouldn't even say that, which shows he doesn't like Becky Johnson, and he doesn't care much about public process and fairness. So here's a little more of that commission appointment discussion as applicants for the CPRB spoke up to the mic, walked up to the mic and spoke.
Mr. Guerrero, Mr. King, Mr. Morris, Mr. Round.
Mr. Mayor, Council, Dave Brown. This is the second time I've applied for the Citizens Police Review Board, and I'll probably keep trying until I make it, so hopefully this will be the last one. I've lived in Santa Cruz 51 years. I just retired a week ago Sunday after 32 years in public safety, and so I have even more time now to hopefully help out the community. I was a scout master in Santa Cruz City for 10 years. I've been involved in the Santa Clara County Shelter Foundation for the last 15 years. I was schooled in Santa Cruz from girls' school to UCSD, where I graduated and went on to study law for a while at the Santa Clara University School of Law.
And this actually was the man who was eventually appointed to the CPRB. He stood in line behind me. He's a tall fellow. He was appointed by Mark Premack, a council member. And he told me that he didn't like much of what I had to say because I was too abrasive and alienated people, though sometimes he agreed with me. I got no sense of what his position was on Citizens Police Review Board matters. I'm going to have to interrupt this segment because I've just gotten a long-distance phone call, a phone call from an activist in Rhode Island, of all places. We're going to go to the phone and talk to her. I'm going to return to this discussion at City Council later because I think it shows the kind of bias and prejudice, as well as gives us some idea as to who's applying for this body that's supposed to oversee the police department. But right now, I'm going to actually get back to the phone line, and we're going to be talking now to Catherine Rhodes from People to End Homelessness in Providence. Hey, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. You're still been beaten up lately by the police?
No, thank goodness for that. We did attend the D.C. inauguration protest, but there was no any kind of police intervention at the site we were at in front of the Supreme Court. Actually, they pretty much were not even in riot gear, which was good for me.
Well, I know that you and I ran into each other in Los Angeles in August after you had gotten a few lumps in the march with Ted Hayes to try to bring homeless issues to the Democratic Party delegates, right?
Yes, that was a pretty scary situation. They were shooting at us with very large rifles and rubber projectiles coming in all directions.
Well, you homeless people are kind of a menace, you know. And also, it's kind of good sport, you know. It's kind of like shooting pheasants, perhaps.
Well, I don't know what, you know, I can't understand why they would shoot us. I mean, many of us were older women and children and elderly people. I mean, we posed no threat. We were holding candles, and many of us were chanting, power to the people. But I think...
Well, that's a threat.
I think when they saw Ted Hayes, a very tall, large African-American gentleman, holding a United States flag and waving it, I think they saw that as a real potential threat to 50 or so police officers. But he was the first to be hit with a very large beanbag-type projectile, and was just knocked over totally.
Ironically, Ted is a perennial defender of the LAPD, and, you know, I would say probably one of the most conservative homeless leaders in L.A. That to take him out was a real boo-boo in my mind.
I think he was very stunned when it happened. I think even he was put back by it at the time it happened. I really do think so.
This happened back in August, right?
Right, and like I said, I don't share all of his conservative opinions, but I think that, you know, he is for ending homelessness, and we all have different ideas on it, so I can't, you know, knock him for that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I try to, you know, I just think at the time, I think he was really set back by it.
Well, you've gone on to other things since then, or I should say continued your work in Providence. Here in on the West Coast, we have several tent cities, one in Seattle and one in Portland, Oregon, called Camp Dignity, which have been essentially set up alternate living situations for homeless people, not as any kind of plush social service, but just simply to say it can't be illegal to sleep at night. Is something similar happening in Providence?
Well, I think it was very similar, but ours unfortunately only lasted for about 2 weeks. It's gotten very, very cold here. We've been having zero and sub-zero temperatures, so there was no way we could still camp out, and I could guarantee the safety, the physical safety of folks. I mean, a lot of people don't have health insurance, and so we really... I was telling people to actually go in because it got so dangerously cold, but we were out there for about 2 weeks in like zero. One day it was like 4 degrees. We all woke up, and it was pretty, you know, it's pretty hard to live out in that type of weather conditions. But basically what's happening in Rhode Island is all of the shelters are full to capacity. We have women and children sleeping on floors in social service agencies. I mean, it's just a very horrible situation. Yesterday we had a homeless man hit by a car while he was pushing his shopping cart. So basically people are out wandering around at night, and it's a real threat to them. Some of the folks won't even go into the community room at Traveler's Aid, so they're out there wandering around at night with no place to go. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. This gentleman, I think, was out canning and pushing a shopping cart when he was hit, but I think it just signifies that the streets are not a safe place for people in general, especially out at that time of night.
Mm-hmm. How many people would you estimate are homeless in Providence, just as a you know, wild guess?
Well, we had, as a wild guess, I mean, each night we have 600 shelter beds. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 people.
And how many people live in Providence? How big is it?
We're about, I think, 1 million people, maybe, or 900,000 in the Providence and vicinity. I'm talking about the state of Rhode Island. It's not, we're not a huge area. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we've had this, I don't know if you've seen that show Providence. We've been highlighted as the best place to live on the East Coast, best city to live on the East Coast, and mm-hmm. Money Magazine and all of this stuff. And
best grates, best dumpsters, that sort of thing?
I guess so. I don't know. It certainly is, I would say, a good place to live if you're affluent and you have money. But if you're not, don't come here. I would tell people, basically, a lot of the low-end jobs are basically working at minimum wage in the service sector or retail sector. A lot of people aren't earning. You know, the living wage is not good here, and it hasn't kept up with the rents. So...
Most homeless people, white, people of color, Hispanic?
I would say it's pretty mixed. I would say, but if you're actually African-American, you stand a higher percentage of being homeless. So the African-American community is at, does see a higher rate of homelessness.
Mm-hmm. What's your homeless death rate last year, and how many people died?
We had 15 folks.
Huh, we had 41.
Yeah. Well, we're smaller than you.
Yeah.
Actually, we have a homeless person's Memorial Day every year. We gather up the names, and we have a memorial.
No, actually, you're not smaller than we. I'm talking about Santa Cruz County.
It's, in itself, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think, too, we have very cold winters here, and I think a lot of our folks stay here in the summer and then migrate towards warmer climates.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it's very cold here. I mean, it's just, you know, a lot of folks... to be homeless here, there aren't a lot of services for street homeless. We don't have a place where people can go and wash their laundry, or there's no locker system or anything. I mean, we just have the basic shelter set up. You know, you go in and you take everything you own with you when you go out.
And you hope you got everything you own when you go
out.
Right,
and you hope mm-hmm. you go in. You know, and it's not, you know, our system, while it's not the worst, it's not the best system.
Mm-hmm. So you ran the this business of what did you call it, a tent city? How did you?
We actually had a tent city on the State House lawn.
And the purpose of this was?
Was to raise awareness about the homeless situation, and we actually were pretty successful in getting people to realize that there was a problem. The first time we did it, we stayed out for 33 days in the total cold, and that was last year. And I caught pneumonia and ended up in the hospital for a week. So this year we spent 2 weeks out there, and we actually got a commitment from Governor Almond to actually open up an overflow shelter last year, and then this year he is going to do it again, but unfortunately they haven't found a building yet. Nobody wants, quote-unquote, those people in their building.
Now, we've heard from one of the other cities that there's a lot of vacant buildings in these urban areas.
There's tons of vacant buildings.
Have you thought of occupying a building? Homes Not Jails has done that in San Francisco.
Well, we've considered that, and at this point, because it's so cold, you know, we're just thinking of, like I said, the health of folks. But we have, that is a possibility. We are meeting to develop some sort of action plan. because we just feel like this homelessness thing is very unacceptable, and we're seeing huge amounts of families, and especially folks with young children, families just starting off. You know, they both might work at minimum wage, and they still can't make it. Mm-hmm. You know, in a two-bedroom apartment, there's nothing there, and there's nothing affordable for these folks.
How many people were doing this tent city?
Last year we had 20 people a night staying with us. We had quite a few people.
You're talking last year, like a year ago, or
a year ago, and uh-huh. Then this year we had about 10 people staying, mm-hmm. and we stayed for about 2 weeks. This time.
Did your tent city have a name?
Almondville.
Almondville?
Yes.
That's the name of the governor?
Yes.
Ah, well, how sweet.
I'm thinking almond.
Uh-huh.
Well, some people were calling it the Almond Joy, but I didn't portray it as that.
I see.
He sort of nicknamed it that.
Uh-huh. So, he came out, made some promises, but oh dear, he can't find a building, eh?
Yes, and so we're going onward, and we're trying to, you know, we're giving them a little bit of time, but it's getting very frustrating. Like I said, we had a gentleman that was hit by a shopping cart, you know, was pushing a shopping cart and was hit last night and killed.
By a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, that's not good either. And we don't want, you know.
How are police treating homeless people outside?
Not very well. Actually, they've been a little bit more sensitive towards it since they know that the shelters have been full. But basically, they don't want homeless people out on the street. They don't want to see them.
The thing to do is to simply, you know, start throwing rocks at the downtown business windows, and everybody can go to jail where presumably it's warmer than outside, right?
Well, you know, I wouldn't advocate that, but some people have said that they're better off in jail. At least they have a roof over their head and 3 square meals a day.
If you talk to people who actually use that strategy, there are a couple people in Santa Cruz, I think, who have done that.
Right. I think it's definitely a strategy, especially with the hard winters. I mean, we call it the ACI Hilton because we don't have a Hotel Hilton in Providence.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it Adult Correctional Institute, ACI Hilton.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people do commit petty crimes to get in for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's really no place for them to go, and I guess folks tend to feel comfortable there. But to me, that's what does that say about our society when people would prefer to live in an institution?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, homelessness has become an institution. We have these nice institutions that people live in, but they never seem to get out of. And I think once you fall into that pit, and that's what we have to break down the institutions and make people aware that it's permanent housing people need. They don't need to be institutionalized in these day shelters.
I hear you.
And they cost a lot of money. I mean, they're very expensive. It's like $20,000 a year to house one person in an emergency shelter.
Now, are there still lots of people outside as you walk around in the snow? I mean, it's snowing,
oh,
I think.
Oh, yeah, there are people that we do have snow on the ground right
now. How
about
igloos? Would that work?
Igloos might work. I mean, we have to think in alternatives. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Igloos might work. I mean, we don't have enough snow on the ground to make an igloo right now, but we did last weekend, so... that might work, too. I mean, they need to really get in the business of helping people and housing people, not leaving them out on the street. I mean, right now, it's very cold. I mean, it's like 22 degrees out. I mean, there are people who are living out in this, and people tend to hide out. They don't tend to make themselves well-known on the street. Like, you can walk down L.A. Skid Row and see literally hundreds of people out on the street. It's not like that here. People tend to hide out in the woods in their tent or find a cubbyhole someplace to hide under, which is even more dangerous because... we don't see these people, and they could freeze to death.
Right. Now, is that because the weather difference, or is it because there's more police hostility? Or
I think a lot has to do with businesses are hostile towards homeless people living in their doorways,
mm-hmm.
and being on their sidewalks. And I think they're the ones that have, you know, instituted this, you know, policy by the police of actually making homeless people move on.
You have business improvement district characters running around in little costumes pretending to make people welcome.
We haven't gotten that way yet, but uh-huh. we do have them meeting, and they want to move Traveler's Aid, which is a day community area where the homeless go during the day to stay warm. They want to move that out of the downtown district off to the outskirts.
So they have the ambassadors or the guides or the hosts, different names for this, essentially business improvement district type groups in different cities.
I think they have, you know, we're getting to that, and I think that's you know, necessarily not a good thing, especially for homeless folks.
How about sleeping bands? You got sleeping bands?
We don't have sleeping bands at this point, but I do believe it's illegal to sleep on the sidewalk.
Is it illegal to sleep in a vehicle?
I'm not sure.
You better look into that.
I better look into that. I don't think at this point it is.
Okay, well, you know, got to do something. Get these wrecky cars out of town, man.
And
those,
I know. And
those
we do have
slummy people.
We do have quite a few people that are living in their vehicles. And like I said, I think that, you know, the tent the tents are definitely an alternative, or igloos, to sleeping outside.
Right.
And I think until, you know, the powers that be realize that not everybody can earn $100K and, you know, wants the house and two cars and the garage that goes with it, you know, that we have to provide an alternative for people.
We're talking to Catherine Rhodes of Rhode Island, appropriately enough, from the People to End Homelessness. You got an email address or a website people can reach you at?
Sure. I have an email. It's homey, H-O-M-E-Y,
uh-huh,
at ids.net.
Uh-huh.
And we have a small website at www.the-key.org.
Huh. And I'd have you give your phone number, but I don't think anybody's going to call long distance.
sure, I'll give you my phone number. It's
okay.
I'll give you my work phone number. It's
401-351-5252.
And I welcome any calls.
And if you want any of this information, listeners, 423-HUFF is the number to call. We can get it to you in case you didn't have a pencil for those websites, phone numbers, and so forth. Catherine, I appreciate your coming on the show. Is there anything you want to add?
Well, I just want to tell people keep going. And if you're out there trying to advocate for yourself, don't give up. And, you know, if you're really into, you want to help the homeless, help give them a voice, and that's the strongest thing that you can do.
Mm-hmm. Finally, do you have a free radio station or a Food Not Bombs in your area?
Actually, we're starting to get a Food Not Bombs. We have a group of folks who are slowly starting to form together.
Uh-huh.
But I do not believe we have a free radio station as of yet.
Well, get to work.
We have to, definitely.
Hey, Catherine, thank you very much for
thank
calling.
Thank you for having me on.
All right.
Yep, bye.
Bye-bye.
And, wow, long distance from the frozen East Coast. That was Catherine Rhodes. Well, no sleeping ban in Rhode Island. Maybe Tim Fitzmaurice better get busy there. I mean, I don't think any of these politicians really would like to have the sleeping ban in power and in place. And I think if they were brought up at City Council here in Santa Cruz, we'd get votes against them because there was commitment to that at one time, and it's just a matter of getting them to put it on the agenda. You give a call to 420-5017, the City Council cold line, if you want to bring people in out of the cold and bring them out of the cold status of homelessness. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, the final 20 minutes of our Sunday show. Again, we're going to go back to the Citizens Police Review Board hearings. I should say the hearings by the City Council to replace Citizens Police Review Board people. With as the new council members come in, they make new appointments, and we're listening to an applicant who I think eventually got on the CPRB. Compliments of Mark Premack, which makes me a little nervous because Premack not only shows a lot of prejudice toward me personally, I have the feeling he's probably the most right-wing of all the people on the council and not particularly concerned about police abuse, but, you know, I'd like to be proven wrong.
Last week, I just finished the 832 arrest, search, and seizures reserve training 3 program. We certified at the Cabrera College, and tonight I start the seating portion of that, and we'll qualify Sunday. I was a police officer for 5 years. I studied criminal law extensively, as well as criminal procedure and investigation. I'm a state certified arson investigator as well. I think that I bring an insight to the police review board of practical experience and current knowledge and training. And I think that's something that would be helpful for that commission. I know how police officers think, I know how they train, and I generally have a good idea how they ought to respond. I've worked with police officers from Santa Cruz to Milpitas throughout Santa Clara County as well for the last 32 years. So I've seen some good police activity and I've seen some bad, and I think I bring that experience to the table, and hopefully can be of assistance to this commission.
And Mr. Rao, any questions?
Thank you very much.
His name is Ralph again, I believe. He is now on the CPRB.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Bruce Morris. I'm at Santa Cruz here.
This is a member of the CPRB who may not be reappointed. He'll be the only one who isn't. As I said, his name is Bruce Morris. He's a sweet old guy, but he doesn't really seem to know what's cooking. He's a former police officer, our auxiliary member. He... Like a previous CPRB board member before him. He seems to be, well, senile, I think, is a little strong, but somewhat out of it, and certainly not responsive to the questions you hear him being asked. And who knows? Emily Riley has not made her appointment yet for the CPRB. She may appoint him, God help us. But anyway, here's the situation. Here's the Morse discussion. That's Morse, not Norse, by the way.
I moved here in 1929, I raised my children here, my grandchildren. I've seen Santa Cruz grow. I'm on the district board now. I just served 4 years. I just get reappointed. That's Morse. So,
any questions? Support? As the CPRB is currently constituted, it is reactive to issues and problems.
Yeah.
Do you favor that construction or a more proactive kind of maybe police commission type of commission where proactive policy setting was more the order of business than reacting to the incidents?
No, we go by the book. The police department makes it out. We get the report. We read them over. See what we have to say about it. I'm pushing myself. I'm not rubber staffed. Mostly.
The question Ed Porter was asking, Councilmember Porter was asking, was, you just want to keep reviewing what the police department does and react to it, or do you want to set policy? Indicating perhaps Porter favors a stronger body that would set policy. Morse doesn't sound like he understands the question, but insofar as he answers it, he says, no, go by the book. We just review complaints. But, well, that's what that was.
Yeah. Please, I know you've been on CPRB for a while. Would you favor, or do you think it makes any sense for the Citizens Police Review Board to also sort of review the police budget each year?
I didn't get all that, sir.
Do you think it makes any sense for the CPRB to review the police budget, you know, from the city budget? Do you think it makes any sense for them to review that?
Yes, very much so. We would like to see that.
Yeah, sure, except he's been on the board for 4 years, and he has never taken the initiative to have the budget reviewed, nor has dear Councilmember Crone ever taken the budget to the Citizens Police Review Board. So you might, if you're an optimist, say, oh, they're kind of nerving up to do something, and maybe they are. They supposedly have five, count them, five progressives on the City Council. But in fact, they have never taken the budget to the Police Review Board, though for the last 2 years, Crone has had that option and hasn't done so.
Okay, hang on.
So we're going to continue listening to this tape and listening to the Citizens Police Review Board Commission appointments.
Thank you, Mr. Morse.
Hey, we're not going to make it for a show.
You're not recognized, Miss.
I actually have, I'm applying to CPRB. I just learned from the staff that deadline for applications.
Say again?
One of the videotapes? Video loop tapes?
Can you hold for a minute?
Yeah.
And what you're going to hear now is me. I came up there and I wanted to speak publicly about council members, but since they wouldn't let Becky do that, even though that's a violation of the Brown Act, I went in, rushed into the offices, filled out a form, and applied for CPRB in order to speak for 5 minutes about my own appointment. Yet, you'll still hear them trying to cut me off, but here is what happened.
Yeah, so I have an application here, and I'd like to briefly comment to that.
I'm sorry. Okay, so I'm looking for a tape. Okay, I'm looking over at the video.
The current CPRB badly needs a new blood. In 1998, we voted in three new council members with power to appoint new people.
Where would that be here? I'm looking at the tape.
Last fall, we voted in three more new members, plus Councilmember Kennedy, who was a key voice behind the fatally weakened board, which currently exists.
I don't know.
I'm summarizing my concerns about the board and the kind of philosophy I would bring to the board here. So I believe it is
looking for the tape, too. I'm not.
You can take the tape
I'm still looking. It's a little red hand.
As a board member, I would be concerned about the staff and the police department itself, as well as the police chief, who really sets the real agenda in the city. I would be concerned, for example, about the staffing of the CPRB. Our current new staff person is a former San Jose police officer. I would like to see more advocates connected with the CPRB. I believe I would like to see actual meetings of the Citizens Police Review Board Subcommittee and the City Council, the joint subcommittee established by former Mayor Sugar, which has had only two meetings in the last year, and for whom a $10,000 consultant and attorney, Bob Aronson, was hired. So I believe we have to move forward on these issues. I would also be concerned to particularly stand up on issues of the homeless. Homeless people, I believe,
on the VCR and slide it up. Okay, give me a number you're at in case I, lose my way here.
A real, not just a second look, but a particular
are you going to this benefit
set of guidelines that police have to follow as they do in Atlanta.
Okay, if there's a problem, I'll call you up.
In Atlanta, for example, you cannot arrest someone for a life-sustaining misdemeanor without having a shelter bed actually open for that person to go to. I believe that's a model we could use in Santa Cruz. It would take a lot of pressure off the police. And I believe that some of the problems that come up in terms of the homeless police interactions have to be dealt with through that kind of initiative, which can come, I think, from the board, the CPRB, as well as from independent citizens. I'm concerned that the past board has taken no action to stop dangerous pepper spray. I would try to do that. I would try to investigate the lethal force policy that's being used and see a substitute for that, because I think we need a different policy. On the day after Martin Luther King Day, we still have taken no action to end racial profiling in Santa Cruz, even though other jurisdictions now require officers to keep records of the ethnicity of those they stop. I believe that should be expanded to people who are homeless to see if there is a disproportionate number of homeless stops. I think that's a significant concern for the citizenry. And if, in fact, that's not happening, then we could reassure the citizenry that that is not happening. And, in fact, the police are treating everyone equally and fairly. In essence, I think the police review board has to take a more proactive stance, as Councilman Porter was saying. I think it needs to address issues that have been repeatedly delayed and postponed from meeting to meeting. The current chair, well-intentioned man, Arnie Leff, has been doing that repeatedly, and I would encourage him to take immediate action on the kinds of policies that minor things, perhaps to some, but significant policies in terms of including more police officers under the guidelines of the police, of the CPRB, such as the CSOs. That's been endlessly delayed. Again, unfathomably, the City Council has not met with the CPRB in the subcommittee, which was established last February. So I would encourage and lobby for that to happen. I would continue and do continue to encourage citizens to file complaints with the police department, and the Citizens Police Review Board, not because this board is taking action on them. It acts in secret, it acts in private, it acts without public hearings or investigation. I would like to see that end. I would like to see for the first time in the 7-year history of this board, real public hearings. And those hearings are available under the current law. But there is not the political will, and I believe this council needs to give the board the power to do that and the backing to do that. I believe it is out of the community that real and meaningful police review has to come, not through sort of schmoozing with the police chief, not through closed deals and closed sessions of city council. The community needs to act here, but I believe that police review board members can have a significant effect in doing this. So I'd encourage you to appoint me to this position, and I'd also encourage you not to reappoint Guerrero, King, and Morse, who are part of the old regime.
Irrelevant. I would like to.
I simply add that.
And what you hear, of course, is again Mayor Fitzmaurice refusing a relatively, well, a reasonable, perfectly reasonable question from the public. When is the public comment period so that members of the public, and all I can say is please step away from the podium, just as when we were in his offices asking to meet with him on the sleeping ban, all I could say was, we're getting a restraining order to have you removed. If this is the Green Party's answer to problems in Santa Cruz, well, we need a new Green Party, I'll tell you. Fitzmaurice is a disgrace in this situation. I encourage people to give a call to City Council at 420-5017 and tell them to, tell them to appoint me to the Police Review Board. I actually was not serious about running for the board, but I think it would be very salutary if I were appointed to that board. I don't think that there's a chance in hell of it happening, but I think it's important that council be told that they need a review board that really works, not this piece of shit they got at the moment, which is essentially a cover-up and a fig leaf, which is a disgrace to our community, and which needs to be changed. Of course, the sleeping ban needs to be changed, too. That's 420-5017 is City Council to call them to change the sleeping ban. There are some indications things are happening. Homeless Working Group meets today at 6 o'clock at Baker Square, if you're interested. There's another group, which I believe Dan Alper and Lydia Blanchard are working on, to get a petition with hundreds of names before the City Council demanding an end to the sleeping ban. Give a call to 423-HUFF, and I'll get you Lydia's number if you'd like that to get in touch with her. It's not a Huff production. It's a separate group. They're doing their own thing, a little more, perhaps a little too conservative for my taste, but hey, better that than nothing. We're kind of rolling to the end of the 2.5 hours of our Sunday show. We'll be coming back on Thursday from 6 to 8. I'm going to do a little struggling to set up the little red hen. We are not going to be... There's still some question about whether we will be at... There will actually be a hearing on Wednesday. We are right now scheduled to have a hearing before Judge Stevens on the issue of the Coffee Klatch 3, the three of us who are expelled from the city council offices under the pretext that we were harassing Anna Brooks, the administrative assistant. We were to go before that judge at 8:30 with a slap suit claim, which is to say a claim that this whole business is a lawsuit by the mayor's office and by the city government to shut us down, to shut down legitimate protest in violation of the First Amendment. But we need more time because the city attorney was late in his application or in putting forward his arguments, and so we really are going to try to postpone this a week. If we can't, we will be there at 8:30, Department 7, 701 Ocean Street. Stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz for announcements on this, and also give a call to 423-HUFF if you want more information. What I'm going to play now is a little bit of a show... it was an interview with Steve Hartman on the issue of this injunction. Steve Hartman is a conservative commentator on KSCO, or their sister station, whatever it's called, KNVR or something. I'm going to play that now, and then I'm going to segue into the Little Red Hen show. Little Red Hen is not here in person today, or the hens, I should say, because they are occupied elsewhere. They've asked me to struggle with the video tape machine. I'm going to try to get that ready while this tape plays. It may take me a little while to do. Please be patient. Little Red Hen will be coming on, and we have about 5 minutes actually till the end of our show. A couple of other quick announcements. There are city council meetings coming up on Monday and Tuesday. The council meetings are kind of peculiar ones. They are not your usual council meetings that happen every second and fourth Tuesday. They are special meetings, but they are happening nonetheless, and they are an opportunity for people to get issues to the council one way or another, particularly tomorrow. Tomorrow, on January 29th, there'll be a 3 o'clock session. I'm sorry, it'll be a 1:30 session that will move to De La Viega Park and the Arroyo Seco Canyon. They'll be touring the park and the canyon. Perfect opportunity for people with signs about the sleeping ban or other issues to join the council and let them know, and the community and the media know, that they haven't forgotten how unresponsive council is to important local issues, be it rent control, be it community control of police, be it affordable housing, you name it. The tour will begin at 1:45 p.m. at the 9/11 Center at De La Viega Chief of Fire, De La Vega, 9/11 Center Street is where it's going to start. And presumably that's at the fire department. And then at 3:30 in the afternoon, they're going to have a tour of the San Lorenzo levee, where they will first meet in council chambers, and you have to bring your own transportation. Then you go down to the levee. And again, you can follow these clowns, I should say council members, with signs. This is a public deal. It's a public meeting. You have a right to be there. And you also have the right, this is interesting, to ask staff questions. Members of the public will be given the opportunity to ask questions of staff. Now, this is interesting. This is the first time this has ever happened at a council meeting that I remember, where staff members, the clowns that take up all the time, these are the experts that give us such wonderful things as the beach south of Laurel, the Gateway Project, huge expenditures for small results, all the money to the police department they want. Normally, the public can't do anything except sit there and watch helplessly as staff drones on hour after hour, and council kind of nods out and gives the staff what they want. At this particular session tomorrow, which is the Arroyo Seco tour at 1:30 and the San Lorenzo Levee tour at 3, you will be allowed to ask questions of the staff. Then on Tuesday, there is another meeting, commence day after tomorrow, at which the Lee property is on the chopping block at closed session at 1:30, and at 3 o'clock there is a city renovation project is on the happening. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert Bernard.
Hey, Bernard, go ahead.
How are you?
I'm good. A little pressed for time, but hanging in there.
Well, I'll make a quickie.
Okay.
I would like to announce out there on Radio Land that Peace and Freedom Party is going to have a meeting.
All right.
And it's going to be on February 25th, that's Sunday, from 3 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon at Loudon Nelson Center.
Loudon Nelson Center from 3 to 5 on February 25th.
Right.
That's great. Is there a number people can call for more information?
I don't have that right now to give to you, but hopefully I can call that in next week's show.
Okay, and if people want more information, call the Huff line and we'll pass their names on to you, Bernard.
That'll be fine.
423-4833.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye. See you tonight.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And Bernard, of course, is talking about the homeless working group. Do come tonight at 6 o'clock to the homeless working group. That's at Baker's Square Restaurant if you want. You can't buy your own coffee. We'll try to buy it for you. Join us again on Thursday from 6 to 8 when we will be here again at Bathrop Spears Broadsides Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. Join us between times at 423-HUFF. And Little Red Hen should be coming on just as soon as I can figure out how to get that together. You're now going to hear a little bit of how Steve Hartman treated the issue of our upcoming hearing, an interview with me from about a week or two ago. And as soon as we get the hen clucking, she will come rolling in at you. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, you know what? It's 22 and a half minutes past 3 o'clock here on AM 1340 KSCO. Does anybody know who Anna Brooks is? Anna Brooks. Anybody know who Anna Brooks is? Anna Brooks is the receptionist in the office of the mayor and the city council people for the city of Santa Cruz. And this is Anna's theme song.
Don't bum around here no more. Don't bum around here no more. It isn't my fault you're poor.
Hey, you!
Don't bum around here no more.
Yes. Don't bum around here no more, Anna Brooks says, and the people she was saying it to were the people of the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, led by none other than the infamous Robert Norse, who joins us this afternoon on AM 1340 KSCO. Longtime acquaintance of mine, by the way. Hello, Robert. How are you doing today?
Hey, I notice you don't say friend anymore there, Steve.
Well,
not on the air, I guess.
Well, when you're causing so much trouble and consternation, Robert, you don't want me to just stick my old head in the noose.
You're a man of integrity, Steve. I think you believe people should have the right to sleep at night. That's
I believe they should have a right to sleep at night, but not in my neighborhood.
I see. Not in your town. Well, that's what the city council says. Maybe you and they are in agreement on this issue.
Okay, folks. I will admit, Robert Norse is a friend of mine.
Uh-oh.
Not a close friend. More like a distant friend.
There we go. Just as long as I keep my distance. I think Anna Brooks and the city council feel the same way. Well, actually, no. I think that you and I are in better terms than certainly the city council and I are. And that's what the issue is, Steve. It's not Anna Brooks. She's just, you know, she's a receptionist. And she is essentially being used as a cat's paw by Mayor Fitzmaurice to get rid of this. It isn't even a protest. It's a peaceful lobbying effort that we spent a couple hours a day for the last 3 weeks leaving notes for council members, giving out flyers, and just doing what people do when they try to get in touch with their city representatives.
But Ms. Brooks feels intimidated by your tactics.
Well,
she feels confused and feels that she is unable to do her duties because of your interference with her.
You know, she actually, if you look at the court papers, and it's a pretty long document that she's given her declaration, and there are two others that support her, there is no specific allegation in terms of any particular work time loss. We're wondering just what work we are interfering with by sitting quietly in these chairs. She is...
Well, there's no doubt there are no production quotas necessitated by any member of the city staff or employees.
Right.
Because they all get paid for 8 hours a day, no matter what or how much they accomplish.
Yeah, nor have we been told by, let's say, her superior, City Manager Martine Bernal, or Assistant City Manager, actually, what we're doing that needs to be altered or modified or any concerns she has. Instead, Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice simply would come out regularly and say to us, I want you all to leave. And we would say, wait a minute, have you heard of the First Amendment?
Couldn't you sit outside the door that the people have to go through and still make contact with those people?
We could sit further outside, but we felt that it was legitimate and appropriate for a small number of us, usually one, sometimes two, occasionally three, to sit quietly inside.
And how many seats are inside?
Three seats.
So you want to take up all the seats so that even people that come in and have to wait for the mayor have to stand up?
Not really. Whenever someone came in who evidenced a desire to sit down, I would immediately jump up and offer my seat.
That's because you are a gentleman.
Well, thank you, Steve. Yeah, the issue here is that these progressive city council members who have a heavy majority on the city council, as usual...
It's only 7-0.
Yeah, well,
are you complaining?
Well, Mark Premack and Scott Kennedy have not usually been considered to be progressive, and actually, I don't consider any of them progressive.
Well, they were until they became, until they saw the light that Santa Cruz had to have a little bit of business to keep operating.
Hey, I'm a friend of business. I like business.
Oh, yeah, monkey business is your business.
Well, that's fun, too, but, you know, the issue here is whether you had 41 deaths, 41 dead names of the homeless dead were read on December 21st at the Homeless Service Center. That's the highest number ever recorded in this area. You have a law that is the worst in the state that makes it illegal to sleep in your vehicle, even on private property with the permission of the owner. I mean, come on. You know, you have essentially laws that are like, you know, anti-black laws or laws that are directed against a particular group of people that I don't think any of us want. And, you know, I was described...
But you don't see residents of this community breaking down any doors to fight for your position.
I think there are a lot of people. We got thousands of signatures to put this on the ballot. We didn't get enough because it really takes, as you probably know, a very professional effort and a well-funded effort to get things on the city ballot. But in fact, I think a lot of people feel that provided, you know, individuals are not acting in abusive ways, not crapping or, you know, leaving litter or disturbing the peace, all of which are covered by existing laws, The need to sleep and to cover up with blankets, a very bizarre situation in Santa Cruz, is a law that criminalizes covering up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night if you're outside. You know, that certainly is something you can't take away from a person, you know. I mean, I'm not a homeless person myself. I'm just a civil rights advocate. That's how I see myself here. I'm just an ordinary person who's just outraged that we have these laws on the books, and I want to see them gone.
I must tell you, Robert, you have never, ever been just an ordinary person.
Oh, you are so sweet, Steve. You are so sweet.
So you've got a court order against you. We've got about 45 seconds left, Robert. A court order was issued, an injunction from going within 150 feet of the city hall.
Right.
And the judge threw it out and said, no, you still should have access to the city clerk's office.
Right.
You still should have access to the city council chambers. So they've just told you to stay away from the front door temporarily? Is that how it works?
Well, no. Actually, we can't be anywhere within the range of City Hall unless we are on some sort of official business to other offices or at a meeting. So we are really still having basic liberties restricted. And to respond to that, we're going to go back on January 30th and try to get damages from the city, because this is a slap suit. It's a strategic lawsuit against public participation. They want us gone. They have no good reason for it because they don't want to deal with this troubling issue of the sleeping ban.
Thank you so much, Robert North. Best of luck to you, my friend.
Hey, thank
you. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Hey, bye-bye. Folks, you know what? We're coming up on the bottom of the hour.
And that was Steve Hartman on the KSCO Combine giving their bit to interview me on the issue of the injunction, which, as I said, will probably be coming up a week from Wednesday, but may well be coming up Wednesday. Actually, right now it's scheduled for Wednesday at 8:30 in Department 7. I am struggling, meanwhile, to prepare for the next show, which I think we have got to. There's going to be a little bit of tape before the Little Red Hen of another show, because we're having a little trouble finding the exact place on this tape where the Little Red Hen begins. And I'll tell you, for an amateur like me, to actually do this at all is perilous ground for the Little Red Hen, but I am trying to do this, and hopefully we are there, or will be soon. Appreciate your patience, all you Little Red Hen fans, as we scan through looking for the appropriate tape here. I think we're close to it. I'm going to start this tape because I want the Little Red Hen to realize I'm not just trying to stall for time here with my my own show. So I hope we are at this point, and thank you again for being with us. And here comes what I hope is a little music before the Little Red Hen show, followed by the Little Red Hen. Again, tune in next week, 6 to 8, Thursday, when we'll return.